Today, I am excited to sit down with a father-son duo that's going to talk to us a little bit about machine learning and how they've built a machine learning company. Alan Rich has been a member of the Tech Founder Circle for a really long time. Alan, I think you've been with us for 2 years, meeting with our tech founders. You've been a keystone in that group. And we were having this cool conversation about the dynamic of machine learning. And then he and his son, Adam, started this awesome company called Y Meadows. And so the topic of today is building and growing a machine learning software company. Why is a machine learning software company different? How do you build machine learning software in the beginning? Like, I have so many questions for you guys, and I'm really excited to jump in. But before we do that, you know, there's also this really interesting dynamic where father, son, and you know, Alan, I know you've talked about this a lot of times about how much fun it is to be able to build something with your son. So I'm excited to talk about that because I think that's also probably got some challenges that you guys have overcome, but also is probably, I'm hoping, is mostly a great story, right? I'm thinking yes, but we're going to dive into that. So I think the folks that are listening right now, you're going to learn a lot about machine learning. You're going to learn a lot about building a machine learning company. And just to kind of give, I'm going to have both of you introduce yourselves in just a second, but Alan Rich brings a wealth of experience when it comes to startups and corporate. He has had two successful exits. He's also worked in corporate as a leader for a really long time. So there's that really cool dynamic. And then we've got Adam over here, who went to school to become a software developer, has worked for big corporations, has worked on machine learning itself. And both of them decided to kind of take the plunge. So I want to dive into that story really quick. So Alan, if we could start with you, if you could give us a little bit of your CV, and then we'll move over to you, Adam.
Sure, Paul. I'm a software entrepreneur by career, you might say. I've had built two software companies before Y Meadows. One was called Elite Information Group, and we built financial systems for large law firms, eventually became part of Thomson Reuters. Then after that, my co-founder and I started a company called Chrome River Technologies. We built expense reporting for corporate accounts and built a international software company that had about over 400 employees at the time. Wow. That I exited. So, two opportunities to really build awesome companies.
Alan, what was your role in that last company?
I was the CEO.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Were you guys venture backed?
We weren't for the first 5 years, and we funded that ourselves, and then eventually we started taking on some, I guess what you now call growth equity funds to help us grow the business. And we had a few rounds of that along the way.
Wow. Awesome. Respect, man. I don't think I could grow a company to 400 employees. At some point I'm going to have to exit. Like, it just gets a little too big for me. I'm kind of start it, get it going, and then go. So it's kind of funny how you have to be a chameleon, a little bit of a chameleon, and being that person it's not for everybody. So, congrats. I'm sure that was a wild ride.
Yes. Great. And, you know, it's been fun starting Y Meadows again, because we started with a really small team and started building that. So it's kind of going back to roots again.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'm sure that's really cool. Adam, so that leads us to you, Adam. Tell us a little bit about your CV and how, maybe tell us a story about how you and your dad decided to do this Y Meadows thing.
Oh, sure. So I was first educated in computer science at Penn. I have a graduate degree in computer science. And then I worked at a couple companies. The most recent of a couple of them were eHarmony. I was on their back-end core services team as a Java developer. And then most recently, I was a principal engineer at the platform architecture team at OpenTable. So yeah, mostly back-end development and software architecture backgrounds. And in terms of how we started Y Meadows, I think I'd always wanted to work to create a startup to do something greenfield. When you start working at these large companies, almost all the engineering challenges are around how do you deal with 10 years or 20 years legacy of code base, old code base of legacy code. Oh yeah, the last project I was working on at one of the last projects I was working on, I remember talking to one of my colleagues and I said, like, how long do you think this project would take if we hadn't had existing code? I think it was 1 month. I think it was a 1 year long project.
Wow.
With existing code. It's just dramatic.
It's like slogging through
it's,
mud.
Yeah, it's a fascinating, it's a really, I mean, it's a great technical challenge and it's, you know, organizationally, and that's how most companies have to operate because that's the benefit of lots of benefits of having customers and mature businesses. But it's from a technical perspective, it's some to sometimes throw off the shackles of legacy code and code greenfield. So that was fun. And we were, I think we were discussing some of the really breakthroughs that happened in the last few years in NLP, natural language processing, which is sort of one subsection of machine learning, teaching machines to learn, understand natural text. And, you know, that's what's one of the great things about, you know, technology is just when new technologies come out, you kind of start look at them and think, what problems could this solve that were just unsolvable before? And how can we, how can we take this out of the realm of academia and the lab and, you know, the tech and, you know, the libraries, the software and, you know, packages that software engineers can use and turn it into something that, that, you know, regular businesses with no technical knowledge can gain huge benefits out of. And, you know, we saw that and that's what we came up with Bimeadows.
Awesome. So you guys decided to combine forces, which by the way, sounds like an amazing combination. Alan, with all of his business acumen and background, and Adam, you're on the leading edge of development and what's happening there. So what a fantastic combo. So let's dive in now to Bimeadows. So you looked at machine learning, you looked at language processing and where it could be applied. And so as you're going down that path, tell us how, where that led to.
So I think we were along the lines of what Adam said. I'm always a believer that you need to, if you start a company, you need to be able to do something that wasn't possible before. Do it better, do it, you know, not just another mousetrap, but something altogether better. And so we looked at two technology, actually one around the natural language processing and another around what's going on with robotic process automation and really being able to streamline workflows for customers at just a fraction of the effort that had been possible before. And, you know, we looked at people who were doing these kinds of things and we realized that the biggest companies in the world were undertaking these kind of projects, huge financial companies, giant insurance companies, but they would hire, you know, Accenture or Deloitte. They would spend years and millions of dollars on these projects. And in the end, they would come out with a good outcome and they were happy, but, you know, it was out of the realm of the possible for, call it, a normal kind of company. Sure. And that really was our ideas. We can kind of productize these technologies and deliver it in a product-oriented way to a customer.
So, okay. So let me, I need to visualize how this is happening. Is this you and Adam? Are you guys like having a business meeting? You know, you're in front of a whiteboard, or do I need to be imagining like a family party where you guys are talking about this?
No, you need to imagine a forest. Here and there. So we went on a camping trip in the Sierras, north of Yosemite. And we were on a backpacking trip and we were going to a place called Bimeadows Reservoir. And we were discussing these ideas as we walked through the forest.
Wow. So,
and that's where the name Bimeadows comes from.
Super cool. So you guys were in the forest talking about machine learning. And next thing you know, Bimeadows comes out.
Yep. And there's a little tiny two-man backpacking tent. You know, you have a lot of time at night to,
nice.
To brainstorm ideas.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a cool story. Awesome. Well, okay, so let's dive in. You know, I think that our audience is probably very curious about machine learning and how machine learning is different. You know, maybe Alan, you can take this question. In your experience with your past companies that you've built and sold, how is a machine learning company different from, you know, maybe a normal run-of-the-mill tech company?
Right. So I think there's a definite business difference, and then Adam can talk from a technical standpoint, but normal, call it normal enterprise software, does something and it's totally predictable. You know, in the world of accounting software, you do something and, you know, the debits equal the credits and your software works, you know. So every, you know, you have an API, you put in some information, it delivers certain things. Machine learning is kind of completely different because it's never 100% accurate. It's, you know, it gets it right 98% of the time, 94% of the time, sometimes, you know, depending on the quality of the data coming in, how challenging the problem is. And so you can't go to a customer and say, here's what's exactly going to happen when you use our software. And that's a fundamental difference. And the customer who's never maybe had machine learning software before is kind of skeptical that the whole thing works altogether. So, you know, you're promising all this cool stuff. I've never seen it work. How do I know it's going to work? And that has created for us, I think, a very different dynamic than other enterprise software, certainly that I've been involved in the past. And we spend a long time building trust with the customers and the prospects that we can deliver what we say we're going to deliver.
Interesting. So if we could pause on that for just a second. So basically you're saying that what you're selling your customer is, hey, I'm selling you a product that is going to learn, and it's not going to learn perfectly. It's a different pitch than this is what this product is going to do for you. This is what it's going to replace. This is what's going to happen. Instead, it's this product's going to get better. It's going to do something for you, but it's going to be learning along the way. So you kind of have to sell imperfection to some degree.
You have to sell. And like part of the reality of the world is, well, humans are also wrong a certain percentage of the time, right? I mean, the people who are doing this job today are not 100% accurate either, right? But you're more skeptical about machines than you are people. And it takes a while for people to recognize that.
And people weren't used to that in computers. No one asked you when you were selling, you know, expense account, the software, like, will the expense report be routed, you know, 100%? They were sure it would, because it always did. You know, it was, whereas in our case, we're going to tell you, you know, our code will tell you what a message is. You know, so they're like, really? Will it work? Like that we have to sell. We have to sell that. We have to sell that we really will work.
And okay, all right, so let's talk about that for a second. What on the technical side, how do you think it's different, Adam?
That's a big difference right there, that it's probabilistic. You know, it's if we know we're right, you know, 90 something percent of the time, you know, that still means we're wrong, you know, one out of every 100 times or something, you know. So that's that is an unusual thing, and it only lends itself to certain problem spaces. There are certain times in where software has to be 100% correct, and you know, machine learning's not a fit for there. We had to design our product around that. We have things like human checks, where a human can verify that something is right before they send it off, and stuff like that. So our product is anticipates that. You know, a big thing, machine learning for the most part, at least the kind we're using, is basically learning by example. So it's only, you know, it's kind of the same way I have for my children, I have one of those little books, 100 words, your baby's first 100 words, and it's got a picture of an apple, and it says apple underneath it. And, you know, and you say apple, and that's how the kid learns. So it's, I mean, this is basically, you know, neural nets trying to use the same techniques that humans use. So it only works if you have 100 pictures of apples, you know, 1,000 pictures of apples and 1,000 pictures of, you know, not apples. So it's
question on that really quick, Adam. If you're talking about word frequency, essentially, right? So when it comes to a machine learning software company, do you have to be, you know, the whole saying in startup land is get rich in the niche, right? Do you have to make sure that you are going after a very niche-y place where there is common words that are being used?
not so much common words, but we're niche in that we're email focused. That's kind of our niche. People write a certain way in emails. They write a certain length. They have things like greetings and signatures and headers and forwards and replies and just a certain way of writing that. We're only doing, you know, written text emails or things that are similar to emails like web forms that or ticket submissions and things like that. So we're niche, and that's in that sense. But you know what, we're taking advantage of a breakthrough in NLP, which is these concepts of transformer models. So we build a new model for a customer on top of a huge model built by people like Google that sort of knows English, and then we customize it for the customer. So we don't have to train on huge amounts of examples. We can take customers' examples and build it on top of existing models. So that's a huge breakthrough that we're taking advantage of.
Wow, that's huge. Yeah. So you're basically you're getting all the word learning from Google per se, and then you're just applying it to a very specific way people communicate, which is through emails. And so with Y Meadows, you guys work with customer support teams. You will take an inbound email and your AI will essentially respond to the ticket and resolve the ticket. Is that right?
That's I'd say one of the most common use cases. Sometimes we'll do other things. Sometimes we'll take an email and if it's something that's too complex to respond to, we can just route it to the right person. Or sometimes we use that kind of what we're talking about, the robotic process automation, to gather other information and add it to a ticket. So it's sometimes resolved. We hope to resolve. That's obviously the best outcome for the client. But sometimes we'll do, for certain other use cases, we'll do direct or enrich, which are other main ways of giving value to the customer.
Wow. Awesome. Wow. This is so interesting. You've got to be able to bucket inbound quite a bit. Like, you have to be able to mark them and assign them to the correct places so that they can get.
Yeah.
So how much work can you actually eliminate on average with Y Meadows?
I mean, we have some statistics from our customers. I would say every customer is a little bit different, but I would say somewhere between 14 and 20% of their total ticket volume we might be able to resolve.
And those are like the worst tickets. Those are terrible. Those are the monotonous tickets that nobody wants, right?
These are the boring ones, exactly. And when I ask our customers, what really made you decide to go with Y Meadows? Most of them don't say cost savings. Most of them say we wanted to get rid of the really horrible work that our people were doing and get them focused on high value work where they can really make a difference to the business. Yep. So that's our job. Get rid of the boring, mundane stuff and get the people focused on, training customers on new features or building relationships with their customers or those kinds of things where, machine learning is not going to solve the problem.
Well, and I think that's important. Alan, I know that you have a customer support executive community that you have built. I've been able to be a part of that. And what I've noticed from that is one of the biggest topics in that community is staff retention. And so how are we retaining staff? We actually did a panel discussion about this, and one of the people said you have to take away the mundane work. Customer support's hard, especially when it's mundane. And so basically what you're saying, what I'm hearing, Alan, is Y Meadows allows a company to eliminate a big portion of the mundane work that they might encounter on their day-to-day basis and allow a customer support executive to be more creative in solving more complex problems or routing to a solution faster or whatever their genius might be. They can kind of play in that role. And I was in client success for a while, and that was definitely a struggle. It's like, oh, okay, here's the fifth call today of the same problem that everybody else is having. If I could eliminate that for my team and say, hey, we've got something taking care of that. Right. That is really quite valuable of machine learning, is that mundane part, and people can engage more.
the team gets excited about this. They get involved in picking the things that we could do because they are tired of solving password resets. They are, you know, tired of answering, you know, the same routine questions over and over again. They also want to do stuff that's interesting and creative.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember one of the companies I worked at, they had a program called Voice of the Customer. They wanted us to sympathize with the customer service agent. So we walked across the office to the other side of the floor and we sat down and we put on one of the little headsets and we sat and listened for a few hours to all the calls. And it's, and, you know, there were these high value interactions, customers who really needed help with a unique problem and they could sit and walk them through. But for every one of those, there were another 10 of like, I need to change my credit card renewal so I can, you know, yeah. or I want to up, you know, change my subscription this or something, you know, or I can't log in and I think my email address changed. You know, there were just these sort of bread and butter ones that came up over and over that were just taking time away from the real times when you're doing what's unique to your business and really right. making the customer love you.
And it can turn off your brain too. Adam, you made me think of a story that I have. We were working with, I was in dental tech for a while and we were working with a DSO, which is basically a multi big organization with a lot of different practices. And we were working on their reviews and stuff. And so one of the things that I had to do was an audit where we started to track inbound phone calls. And I remember someone called into this office and you know, the front desk said, hello, this is blah, 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 dental. And the person was like, hi, I need to come into the office and get some teeth work done. And she's like, okay, what happened, sir? And she's like, I got my mouth hit with a bat and I'm missing all my teeth. And she's like, what insurance do you carry? No empathy, no nothing. And I took that call and I was like, guys, you want to know why we don't have good reviews? This right here, what insurance are you taking? Like the guy just got his mouth hit with a bat and he's missing all his teeth. You would think I would want to know like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry to hear that. How did that happen? But instead it's what insurance, what, you know, it reminds me of Monsters, Inc. What's her bucket? The one little monster that she's always in a bad mood. I'm watching you, Mike Kazowski. So you guys eliminate that, which is pretty cool. So let's dive into, you know, machine learning. Alan, maybe if the sales motion is a little bit different, what other challenges have you found as it's come to growing a machine learning software company?
So I think, you know, we're doing something that I think is helping to resolve that challenge, which is we give our customers the option of opting out. So it's kind of what differentiates us is that sort of guarantee. We're going to deliver what we said. And if we don't, you're not obligated to continue, you know? So that directly addressing that is a key part. And then Adam has done a lot on the enterprise side. Maybe Adam, you want to just talk a little bit about kind of how we establish trust in that area?
Yeah, not so much more machine learning specific, but more just sort of general software business, especially to enterprise customers, because we want large, mid-large organ enterprises to be able to trust our little startup. So I think we did some interesting things. We tried to get major certifications very early. So we got SOC 2 certified, we got ISO 27001 certified really early on one of the first things we did. And I think that just really showed to our customers that we're a mature organization, that, you know, an accounting firm audits our practices and we just do mature developmental security practices. Everyone's, you know, super security paranoid these days. And I don't know if you still call it paranoid if they're right, but they're super cautious. They're rightfully cautious these days about stuff. So just being able to show that, like, hey, a third party looked at our stuff. You know, the fact that we hired in the beginning very senior engineers coming from other major companies, so they know, they can see that even though we're young, the collective experience of our team is is high. And we did some interesting approach with how we, this gets a bit technical, but we went on, we deployed all of our applications in Kubernetes. And we didn't do a multi-tenant approach. We did a single tenant. So each client gets their own database, their own application. So it's completely isolated from the other customers, and we can offer guarantee that a customer might need if they need to deploy on-prem or they need to deploy to certain to geographical regions for we have some European customers who have legal challenges, so this gives us the flexibility of meeting anyone's legal compliance and security needs. And using Kubernetes, we can automate what used to be people bringing up virtual machines all over the place manually. We have just tons of code that automate everything is infrastructure as code, and we're just we can use automation to have that kind of flexibility with it and still be able to scale and grow.
Wow, fantastic. That's super cool. So obviously you guys have a solid foundation. You've got a target market you're going after. In the last couple minutes here, with just a few minutes, let's talk about growing. What's working, for those out there looking to build a machine learning company, what would you recommend in terms of when you get to the growth stage? What are some things you're encountering there? Some challenges you might be encountering you've had to overcome, some things that you've learned about growing this, this company?
Well, I think the big challenge is we're in a category that customers aren't aware of. We have a solution that they don't know about. So, you don't just put up a Google, put up a website, do your search engine optimization and just watch leads come in, because Nobody's searching for this. They don't know that it exists.
Yeah. It's like, you're not a cookie shop. I feel like cookies today. Oh, okay. Yeah. Let me go look at a cookie
shop. Let me go look for cookies. Right.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. And so,
wake up in the morning and be like, I think machine learning could solve this.
Well, not yet. Some guy invented the cookie, and that guy had this challenge, He had to go look for people craving warm treats that went with milk, which is really hard. But then, once he cornered the market, now people just search for cookies. But we have in the beginning is really hard.
Right. So we're doing, the challenge for us is a lot of generation of, us generating the interest, us getting people excited about it. It's a lot of outbound work instead of just, watching the opportunities come in. And so we're hoping eventually that will change as the news gets out there. But in the meantime, it's our job to educate people. And that's a big challenge.
Have you noticed, I know that some companies will do this kind of profile thing, but obviously you're on the early adopter side. Like, do you spend time identifying companies that are clearly early adopters of new technologies? And do you spend effort trying to find those people? Or do you find that you have to cast a net wide and then hopefully, you find the early adopters and they come in? And what's your strategy there? Or does early adopters even matter?
But we need people that are, I'd call it tech forward, but as an example, last week we signed a customer that's a, municipal water and sewer authority. And you wouldn't think of them as a tech forward business,
right.
But the people there are just really excited to be doing new technologies and bringing their utility forward. Our more typical kind of prospect might be a, more tech oriented and, willing to adopt new technologies. So we certainly think we're trying to find the people who are on the early adopter craze, but, sometimes based more on the personality than the industry.
Right.
100%. It's, I know that in like Crossing the Chasm, he calls this group visionaries. It's these people visionary. who just look at the technology and they can because you have to use some you have to really imagine, you have to go like, wow, translate our technology and look at your own use cases and put that together and go, oh, this is going to transform my team, and you have to be willing to try something new. And it's not I don't think it's so much a category. It's who the per people at those organizations are. And then, yeah, unfortunately, they don't put, you know, visionary on LinkedIn on their right next to their name. So we can't, right. we can't That's just funny. Find them. You just have to, but when you run into one, it's fantastic.
Wow. That's so cool. Well, I want to thank you both for sharing the insight that you're bringing to the table with machine learning. Love the story about how you created Y Meadows. Thanks for spending the time. Thanks for sharing what you shared. If people want to get in touch with you, they can reach out to you on LinkedIn. I've got you on the event here so people can look at that. Just look up Alan or Adam Rich with Y Meadows. And thank you guys again for joining me. I know we've got other meetings to get to, but appreciate you circling back for this 30 minutes and sharing your story.